This is David Soselsky, Southern Oral History Program, University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. This is another of the Listening for a Change series of interviews that I'm doing across North Carolina. Today I'm in Southport, North Carolina. It's July 28th, 1998, 1999, and I'm interviewing Ms. Lila Piggott.
Am I on now?
You are, and it's coming through strong.
Okay.
Yeah. I just want to start by getting some of the kind of basic facts of your life, Ms. Piggott. Like, when and where you were born.
Speak up.
Like, when and where were you born? I can sit right here.
Okay. Where was I born?
Yes, ma'am.
I was born in a very small town named Hardeeville, South Carolina.
And
Hardeeville is just, I guess, less than 20 miles from Savannah. So I was almost a Georgia peach, not a Georgia cracker. But I was born a sandlapper and grew up a Tar Heel. Because I came here when I was 6 years old in 1923.
So you were born in
16.
Mm-hmm.
And I will be 83 in November.
My goodness.
Started school, 6 years old, right here in Southport. And it was the best thing that ever happened to me when that train pulled into that depot. That's the only way you could get here except by water.
Well, what brought your family here?
My father was with the Atlantic Coast Line, and he met my mother, and they fell in love. And Christmas Day, 1915, they took the train and went to Charleston, South Carolina, and got married. And I was born the next year. And then 18 months later, my brother was born. There were just two of us. And he lives in Gloucester, Virginia. Mm-hmm. And we talk on the telephone more than we write, but it's okay. Easier. But his family's up there. He spent 30 years in the service in the Army and retired, then spent 10 years with civil service with Williamsburg in Virginia and retired again. And so he is, as I said, he's 18 months younger than I, so you see he's in his 80s too. And we were very, very close, my brother and I, and he had asked me to send him some of the things that I remembered that we did as children, because he said, "Sister, you remember, we never went apart. We always went together." I said, "Yeah." And he told me something that I never realized. He said, "I remember distinctly the first time you ever went anywhere that you didn't take me." And I thought that was odd after all these years and fighting in about three or four wars, because he was in Vietnam, he was in the Second World War, and he was in the Korean War and the War of Occupation in Germany, and just all over the world. Sure. He spent half his life overseas. Wow. In his service. And a lot of times his family could go with him, but there were times when they couldn't.
Sure.
But I thought that was the oddest thing that he remembered that, and I don't remember. But I did send him a list of some of the things we did to refresh his memory.
Like, what did you put on it?
Hmm?
Like, what kind of things?
Oh, just things that we did that wouldn't appeal to the young people today. And I think it's such a shame, because we made our own entertainment. We didn't have televisions. We did not have telephones. Well, now, I'm not saying that there were not telephones, but just everybody didn't have them. You must remember that we grew up in the 20s, in the flapper days, and the, you know, Black Bottom and Charleston and all of those days. And I well remember distinctly every inch of Lindbergh flying to Paris. I can remember as young as I was. Well, I wasn't too young then. But we just waited and bated with bated breath, like we did watching the men go to the moon.
Uh-huh.
Well, that was just as exciting.
Wow.
To know that Lindbergh was on his way to France. I will never forget because by that time we did have access to radios. If we didn't have one, our next door neighbors did, or somebody. And I got a little bit away. You asked why I came to Southport. I'll go back to that because that's important. He was with the Atlantic Coastline, and it kept him away from home a lot. And he was dissatisfied, leaving my mother and two children. And he had moved up to Elhu. He got a chance to go with a company called Perry Motor Company, an affiliate of Ford Motor Company. So he took it. And so he spent his entire career, his life, as a mechanic and a salesman, but mostly a mechanic. And he was a real good mechanic. He worked on not only cars, but when we got to Southport, he started working on boats. Because then, you see, boats all had automobile engines. They didn't have these fancy things they have today. And believe me, I think I could put a GM together on a boat, as long as I worked with my husband and made trip after trip to Wilmington getting parts and Raleigh. And
I bet you could.
It was exciting. I have written a lot. I've got two album things there full of things. And I led a very interesting life. I really did. I had my ups and downs, just like anybody.
Sure.
But when I look back on it, there aren't many people that really had the experiences I did. But he decided to give up the Atlantic Coastline, as I said, and go to a regular job where he could go home at night.
Right.
And he did. So consequently, we moved to Ridgeland, South Carolina, which is 18 miles north of Hardeeville. Now, I don't recall, I know this sounds very stupid, but it is the honest truth. I don't recall but two things in my life that ever occurred until I came to Southport. And they were bad.
Those kind of things.
I picked a bunch of flowers with some kids in Ridgeland, stuck my head right in the middle of them, not knowing that it was poison ivy. Poison oak. Well, I paid for that, and I certainly remember it. Then the next time, I went with my mother to visit a friend of hers, and I had a headache. And it got so bad I had to leave the kids and go in and complain to mother. And of course, I was crying. I hadn't even started to school. And they put me to bed and watched me all day. And I have never forgotten how bad my head hurt. And that's the only two things I recall. I know now, because I had them for many years, that was a migraine headache. I had them for many years afterwards, yeah. So I thought, that's the first one I ever had.
Sure.
And that was young to have a migraine headache, I guess.
Yeah.
I can't prove that's what it was, but yeah. I always felt like it was. And my father had come to Southport and was in staying in a boarding house, which is, I guess you would call a bed and breakfast now, but this was a boarding house. The lady had not only a room for everybody, she served breakfast, dinner, and supper. Now, we're not Yankees, so it wasn't breakfast, lunch, and dinner. It is, and to us, it still is breakfast, dinner, and supper. And we can't help how many Yankees come to town. It's still that. That's another subject.
I think so.
Anyway, Miss Winnie, her name was Miss Winnie Placey. And she saw a picture of Mother and my brother and I in his room. And she said, "Mr. Hubbard, when are you going to bring your family here?" And he said, "I can't find a place to rent." And she says, "You don't need one." She said, "Write them and tell them to come, and I'll take care of them till we do find a place." And that's exactly what we did.
Wow. So he was a mechanic.
Yeah.
He had found a job as a mechanic here.
He was a mechanic and a salesman. Because he sold Southport the first motorized fire truck, and we have it, still have it. They had it completely restored, and it is absolutely the most beautiful thing you ever saw. It cost a fortune, but they did do it, and it's in one special place at the fire department, and the only time it gets out is 4th of July. We have the North Carolina 4th of July festival. which draws anywhere from 30 to 50,000 people. That's another story. I stay home and watch the whole thing on TV. Right. And well, I used to be very, very active in it, but I'm not anymore.
Well, what was Southport like when you were a girl?
Okay, that's a good question.
Let's pretend that none of this had happened
okay.
yet. No coffee shop down here, no antique stores. Let's go back to...
Okay. When I got to Southport on that train, I was acquainted with trains because of my father and I had an uncle. My mother's brother also was with Atlantic Coast Line. So I was well acquainted with trains to a certain degree. When it pulled up at the depot, I believe they call it now, but anyway, it's a depot, I ran to the end of the car and got out on the platform like, and I saw Daddy, I saw him standing, and I jumped down and ran to him through the sand and sand spurs. And he threw out his arms and threw me up in the air, and then my brother was right behind him. And that is when my life began. Right that night, my life began. I fell in love with this town, and I still love it better than anything on earth.
And what did it look like that first day?
Okay.
I'll go on about
what happened that night.
Create it for me.
He already, of course, Miss Winnie was waiting. She had everything ready. Am I doing okay?
We're doing great.
Okay. We started walking up the street, and I saw a street light. And I said to my father, Daddy, where is the circus? And he laughed, and he said, that's not a circus. That's what is known as a street light. I had never seen a street light. Well, Daddy lived to be 99 years old, and he was interviewed a lot by a lot of people. Uh-huh. And he always brought that up, he said, because I said, he would say to the people, he said, you reckon I brought her up out of the sticks? Which I always thought was very funny. But it was the first street light I had ever seen. And there were only a few in town. There were not
right.
everywhere. And they were only turned on at a certain time. And they did have electricity in Southport, but that was only turned on a few hours a day. And that was to give women time to use electric irons. Uh-huh. Now, at the beginning, I'm not sure whether they had electric irons then or not. I really can't recall that. But I do recall distinctly when I was 10 years old, my father bought for my mother an electric Singer sewing machine. And I still have that. And it was one of the first that they made. It's really a little treasure I have. And up to that time, she was a wonderful seamstress. But it was a pedal type, you know. I'm sure you know what I'm talking about. But we went to Miss Winnie's, and it wasn't long before we found a house across the street that had an upstairs apartment. So the whole upstairs was ours. And we lived there. And then we found a house up on the corner of North Atlantic. I'm still in the same block, in the 300 block of Atlantic Avenue, and North Atlantic Avenue, and we got a house on the corner of Atlantic and Eastmore, Brown Street, and we lived there for a right long time. And then the lady that had rented us that apartment died. And that house was up for rent, and so we rented the entire house. And that's where I stayed until I got married. And I was still right there in that same block. I never left it. And I babysat all the kids that were brought up there, along with my friends that I had. There are, I guess you would say surprisingly, right many of us left. We're scattered, but... right here in Southport. Now, we're getting ready to celebrate my Southport Garden Club. Southport Garden Club is getting ready to celebrate their 50th anniversary this year. And there are three charter members left, and I'm one of them. That's Dorothy Hardy and Margaret Harper and I.
Well,
And we had been put in charge of the whole thing. Would you believe that, all of us in our 80s? But we have a lot of young, new and some, I'd say 6 or 8 Southport girls that are in it too, old Southporters. And we're very busy with that right now.
But what did Southport look like in those days?
It was beautiful. The park, now I don't suppose you have seen that because you came straight up, like I told you, didn't you?
Yes, but I've been here
from
before.
The ferry, you came right straight up Moore Street. Okay, yes. Well, you missed the park. It's beautiful. You really need to go up and see that. That park, that whole, well, I would say it was probably almost 3 blocks right in the center of the town. And Governor Benjamin Smith gave it to the city of Southport. And that's when we were known as Smithville. Of course, that was way before my time. Right. But Southport was chartered, or Smithville was chartered in 1792. We're very old. This is a very old and historical town. And we still have, I know I'm jumping about a lot, but we still have down on the waterfront, and you must see that too. You need to see that. Is what is known as, we call it the garrison, but it is Fort Johnston. It is the smallest government installation in the United States, still in use by the government. The building is still there. The first building that was put there, beautiful brick. And years ago, somebody got slap happy and they painted the brick white. Well, we didn't like it. So we raised the money and had the white taken off and got back down to the brick. And in the meantime, they took off part of it. But there's another thing I want to add. There was a Civil War hospital here. And I own a house left to me by my parents that the first 2 rooms in that house was a wing of that Civil War hospital.
Wow.
And I have restored it. It's a clapboard, you know, wide board,
right.
Narrow, wide board.
Right.
And there were 2 wings. The other one is on the far end of Bay Street. But they moved that there, or maybe that's where the hospital was, but they built a huge house. And that's in the center. You can't see it, but you can see mine. And it has perfectly beautiful wide pine floors. And when I got a workman to go in to tear it out and fix it. Now, my dad had fixed 1 room, restored it, and really nice. So I didn't have to do anything to that. But the rest of the people from all over town went up there just to look at the wood.
Okay.
It was just gorgeous. It was unreal. They didn't think it'd be that old. And so I preserved everything I could, and I knew I was going to rent it, so I put a carpet wall to wall, so I didn't want anybody moving furniture and scraping those pine floors, because I figured maybe sometime when I got old, I'd end up in that house. I don't think so. I've been here 56 years in this house. Of course, it's old, too. It was built in 1897, and it was quite old. It had the breezeway in the kitchen out in the back, and that was the first thing I did was tear that off. I modernized it. I'd give anything if I could get it back like it was.
Well,
but that's...
Taste change.
Yeah.
How did people make a living in Southport?
Commercial fishing, mostly.
Mm-hmm.
We had menhaden plants, which are the, what they call... Puggy. Mm-hmm. You're well. How'd you know that? Oh, I know where you're from. Yeah.
I grew up outside Beaufort, so we had the.
Yeah, that's right. You're from Harlow.
That's right.
Okay, so then I'm talking about.
How many puggy plants were there?
Oh gosh, I don't know. We had maybe as many as 3 at one time.
They smelled good.
It was Brunswick Navigation, and they kept changing the names. And there was Hayes first up on this end of the town, but. I have pictures I can show you of the one that was destroyed in Hurricane Hazel. It was up this way. There were 2 up there. And they were owned by Harvey Smith and Moorhead. Have you heard the name?
Oh, yeah.
Well, you should have heard it.
Because he had the place.
Yeah.
He had the place in the Newport River, I think.
Uh-huh.
That burned eventually.
Yeah, yeah. And his wife, Evelyn, is the woman that was responsible for turning Beaufort into the historical town it is.
Right.
I think I'm correct on that. I hate for you to...
Right.
Without checking it out. But I'm almost positive because a woman in Southport, she was not from... She had moved in here, but she and her husband, for some reason, moved there. Right. And she became very friendly with Evelyn Smith and helped her. I can't remember who her name was, but I did know her quite well. I think she was in our garden club. But that woman is the one that did the hard work.
So I know what Southport smelled like now. I know what it smelled like then, when you were little.
Well, you know, we never objected. And it irritated us when people started coming in here.
Sure.
And they just flung a fit. I mean, they wanted those fish factories closed down. It was unbearable. And what we said? We said, smells like a new pair of shoes to me. Oh, there's my winter coat.
That's right.
That's the way we felt about that. It was stick water.
Mm-hmm.
And it did stink.
Yes.
But we paid no more attention to it than we did the fresh air.
Was that
a way of life.
Was that the biggest thing in town?
Yeah.
It was the biggest thing in town?
That, and then shrimp got very, very important.
When did that start?
Well, I was a little girl. I remember being able to go out with my friends at night, but we had very strict orders. We all had to be home by 11 o'clock, regardless. And I lived farther away, me and Dorothy Hardy, and we got taken home first. We never paired off. We always stayed in a group, and we'd meet downtown, and I can't help but smile about that because I can remember how much fun we had. Went right downtown where the stoplights are. There was a beautiful home there, and down on the corner was an office next to the house, built right along with it. The State Port Pilot used to have that office. But anyway, we would sit on the corner, and it was full of grass. And why we didn't tear it all to pieces, I don't know, because we ate the grass, chewed on it, and we sit there maybe an hour just gathering. And then when we figured everybody was there, there might be 12 or 15 of us.
Wow.
We just got up and walked all over town, and we sang, we played games, and nobody paid any attention to what we did. We didn't disturb anybody. We were just good kids.
Wow.
Really good kids.
Sounds nice.
And I'm so glad that we had parents that knew how to bring us up. We all went to church. I mean, it was go to church or you don't do anything else.
Right.
Now, my mother said, you can go to either service, morning or night, but you're going to one, or you don't do anything else. So that was good training.
Mm-hmm.
So therefore, I have always been very, very active. I was a music director nearly 40 years in my church,
wow,
desperately trying to get out of it. And I finally did in 1976. Ha! I found somebody, a young girl that I had. Well, I remember she was, I think, in my glee club when I had it. And I started a glee club in our high school. They didn't have music, and it drove me crazy. And they called on me all the time when they needed somebody to play the piano. I had been playing piano. I started when I was 4 years old, playing by ear. And then I started taking music when I was 10, piano lessons. And I couldn't stand it because they didn't have any music, and my daughter was coming up along. So I went to the principal and told him, I said, if you will go before the Board of Education and get permission to give me one period a week, I'll start a glee club. He did, they did, and I did.
That's great.
And it worked. When I walked in that first afternoon, 2 o'clock, Thursday, I had about 50 young people staring me in the face, and I thought, my gosh, I can't take care of all this. So I got four friends, and the five of us kept that thing going until our schoolhouse burned. Arson. Definitely. It didn't burn the auditorium, and I managed to get a lot of the music out, but I didn't get it all before it went too. But I did get a lot of it out. Plus, the piano. I never will forget that. Our glee club collected enough money to buy two pianos, one Baldwin for us, and one small keyboard to roll around from room to room in the school. Now, that was caught in this fire. It got wet. But I called Wilmington and did what they told me to do and then got it to Wilmington. And we used that until it burned up in the USO building when it burned in 1995.
Wow.
Lost that. But the other one, it was after the fire was over and they were carrying things in our church. I had gone, of course, we were there, stored everything that they brought out of the school in our church. And when Margaret and I were through, we thought we were through, it had poured rain all day and was still raining. And we were drenched. Some of the kids came and said, Miss Leela, and Miss Margaret said, there's a whole bunch of stuff in the hall in the courthouse. We said, okay. Well, anyway, we went over, and the first thing I saw was that Baldwin piano.
It was there.
And guess what it was wrapped up in?
No.
It had the cover that when I bought the piano, put the cover on it. It had the American flag and the state of North Carolina flag all over, soaking wet. But I said, who in the world brought this over here? They said, the boys in the glee club. Now, you think I wasn't proud? I cried. It tickled me so good. And, of course, I still see they've got grandchildren now.
That's nice. That's sweet.
But as I see you asking about how Southport was, it was the most close-knit town I guess you will ever find. I can't prove that because I never lived anywhere else except those endless years I had to go to Key West with our boats and other places that we stopped, like Fernandina Beach, Florida, and Daytona and St. Augustine, and we followed the shrimp and Morgan City, Louisiana, and but I hated every time I ever had to leave this town.
How did you meet your husband?
Well, actually, we knew each other as children. His father was in the Coast Guard. That, at the time, was the life-saving service.
Right.
And, by the way, just an added note that not everybody is aware of, but Alexander Hamilton started the Coast Guard.
I didn't know that.
When he was Secretary of the Treasury.
How about that?
But anyway, of course, the life-saving service was an offshoot of that. Uh-huh. And they took care of Baldhead Island, the lighthouse that was there, which is still there. Old Baldy, yeah. I'm sure you must have heard of that.
Oh, yes.
There must be a picture somewhere around here. There it is, right there.
Yeah.
That's Old Baldy. They have restored it. That's quite a very exclusive resort now. And
yeah, too rich for my blood.
But when I was growing up, we could go anytime we wanted to because Dallas, my husband's father, was over there. The Coast Guard was there and the Life Saving Service and Captain Charlie Swan. And I won't go into all that. It means nothing to you. But that gave us the freedom of going.
Uh-huh.
Now, Dallas's father was there and you know who Bobby Ruark is? Robert Ruark?
Oh, yes.
Okay. Of course, you know he was not born in Southport. He was born in Wilmington, but all of his family was here. And he spent every moment that he could of his life, he spent Southport with his grandparents. And that's, if you've never read The Old Man and the Boy,
I don't call him Bobby.
I don't know,
I know
how many.
Robert.
Well, now my husband's name is in there, but it's misspelled. It's Dallas PICKETT. And, of course, it's PIGOTT.
Right.
But I figured by the time it got to the printers, and maybe Bobby forgot. But he and Bobby and Bobby's first cousin, Roy McKiffin, who, by the way, was best man at mine and Dallas's wedding. They were very close friends. Bobby was in the Coast Guard. I bring that up because when the Second World War was beginning to very heavy over in Europe, we were not unaware, even though we were young.
Yeah.
We knew it was going on, and we slightly kept, especially because of Roy. Being in the Coast Guard, he was well aware of what was going on. But we didn't seem to be too concerned, you know. And we had gone through the Depression, and everything, when Roosevelt went in, everything changed. All of a sudden, we all had jobs, which is great, and I've got all this written down. I think the one of the best things that ever came out of Franklin Roosevelt, who was a little tin god to me, was the Intercoastal Canal from Maine to Miami. All of a sudden, the smaller boats didn't have to go outside and be lost. So we got quite used to and still are.
Sure.
It was fantastic that that was done. That was done by the WPA.
Yeah.
And I watched them do it. And it stopped us from being able... I know I'm jumping around a lot.
But these
things that just pop in. When they dug the canal, of course, they used the Cape Fear River. They didn't have to dig that because they used that as the canal, which I guess they did a lot of other places. But when they did that, we went swimming. We waited till high tide, and we were ready in our bathing suits to jump overboard. And we would, if the tide was coming in, we'd come all the way down to here and jump overboard here and swim all the way up to the far end of Southport.
Wow.
That was by that time. It was not developed as much as it is now. But we'd go as far as we could to what we call the coal dock, which was on the same street as the depot. And they called it the coal dock because that's exactly what it was. The trains could back up down there and load boats that came in with coal. And on the other side was a big sawdust pile that we played on. And to this day, I do not know how it got there. But I remember the coal. Well, in fact, we've got pictures of it. But then there was a great big tank where the train got water out of it. And that's all developed with beautiful houses now. And that's a thing of the past. The train went out of style, and the depot burned. And
So your husband wasn't in the fishing, but his family wasn't a fishing family.
No. There were four boys. There were twin boys, but one died at birth. Dallas was the youngest. And I just have to say Papa, because that's what I called him, Dallas's father. His name was Marvin Pickett, but when he was sent to Bald Head, they bought a house in Southport. Now, you don't know Southport, but it was right next to the BB&T Bank. Mm-hmm. They've torn it down now, and they wouldn't tear it down today. That was an old two-story house, but back then they did, and they left when Papa was transferred. Now, Dallas and I, of course, were very young then, and we played together up in the Grove. That's where we all played. In the daytime, we were up there in the park. It's what Franklin Square Park to us is the Grove.
Okay.
Now it's full of azaleas and camellias and they ruined it. I can't say they ruined it, but they took our playground.
Yeah.
I have got that written, that the cruelest thing I ever saw was after they planted the plants there, they put a sign up, no bicycles allowed in park. And I said that was the cruelest thing could have happened to us. And it was. I've never forgotten it, and I never will. But anyway, it did take away something that meant an awful lot to the young people. We were safe there. Our parents never worried about us in the day, not for one minute, because they knew we were in that park, and they knew that all the neighbors all around were keeping an eye out on us They watched us, and if anything happened, if anybody got hurt, they'd run across the street and get somebody to come over, an adult. That just everybody looked after each other.
That's changed.
It didn't make any difference. It hasn't really changed a whole lot. Now, we've got a lot of newcomers, but they're falling in with us
for
the most part. And I felt very strange a few months ago. We have so many newcomers in my garden club that we now have to wait name tags. I can't believe that. It irritated me.
Sure.
And I have to wear it when I go to church. I mean, I've been going to that church since 1923.
Right.
And I have to wear a name tag.
Right.
And I really don't care who they are, to be honest with you. Oh, I, that was an ugly thing for me to say. I don't really mean that because I have made some real good friends.
I understand completely.
But suddenly, a few months ago, and I'm sorry that I'm jumping around like I am. But I have always never been at a loss for words. But we had a meeting. I think that might have been the day we had. We have an auction every year. But anyway, everybody was there at Eloise Spence's. Has a great house to have it because it's big. And it was such a delightful day. The day was beautiful and everybody seemed to be fine. It suddenly hit me. You know, I don't really resent these people. They're okay. They're working hard in the club, and we can't last forever. Somebody's got to take over.
Sure.
And that day, I decided I'm not going to feel that way about these newcomers anymore. I can't help that they're coming. They are making a big difference, and they have made a big difference.
Sure.
And they are still coming. Did you know that Brunswick County was the second fastest growing county in the state of North Carolina?
Wow.
It is unreal what has happened to this town. It's not only that it's happening outside of town, it's happening inside the city limits.
Yeah.
And then, of course, some of them are asking to be incorporated into the town, which they are, annexed, I should say, into the town, and they are, which is okay. I was one of the few people that wanted Walmart to come. Oh, I mean to tell you, they had a committee of concerned citizens that was a mile long. But Leela didn't sign it because I knew it was coming. If it had to go 5, 6, or 7 miles out to 11, it was coming. Guess what? They already had a piece of property bought. If Southport did not annex them and put them closer into town, that's where they were going. The tax money would have gone to the county. The city would have lost it. I said, let the city annex it and get the tax money. It's going to be a huge development.
I'm sure.
All kind of stores.
Well, tell me about the how you and your husband got into the shrimping business. How did that happen?
Okay, I did get way late on that. As I said, we grew up together because he went to school through the sixth grade here. But I don't recall that he was really a very good friend. He was more hung out with the boys on the water,
right,
with Bobby Ruark and Roy, and then they were the kind that stayed on a boat, either over on Bald Head or somewhere. And I don't ever recall that he was with us at night around town. Now, he may have been, and I just didn't remember it. But I never forgot the Pickett boys. I remember the Pickett family. And suddenly when Papa, he was transferred somewhere like Connecticut. And Mama Jane, that was his mother, I used to stay with when I went on the head of my story. She never did, I found out later. When he was sent that far away, she never took the children. They owned a home that Papa built, and it is perfectly beautiful, the old house, and somebody has restored it, and I'm so glad. She went back to Straits, North Carolina, and took the children, and that's where Dallas graduated from high school.
Got it.
In Smyrna High School.
I'm
sure you know where that is.
Yeah.
And I have a picture of it. And So in 1935, he graduated. Now, I graduated in 34, but he was a year older than I, but he was just like my brother. They didn't have anything to do. There were no jobs, because I'm talking about Depression days.
Sure.
And this happened all over the country. Boys especially did not graduate from high school. They deliberately failed so they could still stay in school. And my brother was one that did that, and so was Dallas. They both stayed in to play basketball. Unfortunately, they found out they couldn't play but 4 years, and that 4 years had passed, so they had to stay another year not playing basketball. They were both excellent ball players. And in 1935, Papa, uh-huh, Dallas's father, retired, and they decided to come back to Southport. Because he had gone in the trucking business hauling shrimp out of Moorhead and Beaufort. And he said, well, hey, let's go back to Southport. We own a home there. There are a lot of shrimp houses there, which there were. And so they moved back, and Dallas didn't come with them. Now, I didn't know that at the time. I just knew the pickets. I said, hey, the pickets are back, you know. And I didn't pay any attention, but a friend of mine, who, by the way, was here yesterday to see me, and we were up on Atlantic Avenue, right in front of the house I own. The gymnasium is there now, but there were clay tennis courts and a wooden basketball court. And Lib and I were playing tennis. And I was going with a boy named Joe Wells, good old Carteret County name. And I was dating him. And I said, Lib, there comes Joe. And I said, but he's not driving. She said, no, he's not. Who is that? And as they got closer, they came right through the net and took it and went on over in the grove, posting the whole thing. I said, my stars, that was Dallas Piggott driving Joe's car. Well, Joe and Dallas had been friends a long time, and coming from the same place. But they did come back, and they put it all back up. And because I had a friend after my husband died. He was in California. Fortunately, they were here in Whiteville when he died, and they came on over. And Bill had not had too many years to even know Dallas. And, of course, they were living in California, but we knew his wife real well. And he wrote me the prettiest letter about Dallas, that how glad he was that he did know in the short time he did. He said, and aren't you glad that he took the tennis net? And then I have to explain to everybody about what did he mean by that tennis net. But that started it. He asked me for a date, and we started dating in 1935, or 36, I'll say, maybe. And we went together 5 years, and we were married in April of 1941. The war broke out in December. Now, that's how much we paid attention to it. As I said, we were not unaware that it was going on, but it wasn't serious enough that it ever occurred to us that maybe we would get in this war, and Dallas was certainly eligible to be drafted.
Right.
Except that he did have an injured knee that he had hurt in basketball, and he limped from the time he hurt it until the day he died. He was still limping on that knee. But he went in the service. As a matter of fact, I think I signed his draft card. In fact, I know I did. And he enlisted in the Coast Guard. And Fort Caswell across the river is a very old historical.
Yes.
And the bunkers are still there. I don't know how safe they are to go in now, but I spent many an hour going in and out of those bunkers over there. It was a wonderful place to go to, and we knew Sergeant Jelks, who was the caretaker, and he had two boys my age, and so we had the run of we could go any time we wanted to. But anyway, as we get back to Dallas in the service, of course, do you know anything about the horse patrol in the war? Okay.
Up our way. Yeah. Huh? Up in Carteret County, I know about it.
Uh-huh. Well, we had it here, of course. We had it all up and down the both coasts. Uh-huh. And it was very important because the boats were being blown up while we could hear. I took a American Red Cross Nurses Aid course and went to work at the hospital. And regular hours, regular shifts.
Here in Southport?
Uh-huh. I worked out there all through the war and about 3 years afterwards because they didn't deactivate Fort Caswell. And they had hundreds of sailors and soldiers over there. They did not deactivate that for about 3 years after the war was over. So they still needed us at hit this hospital because we not only had all those, we had the Southport and the Brunswick, we own a hospital in Brunswick County.
Sure.
So we had people from all over the county. Uh-huh. And so they asked for volunteers to stay on. But we got paid then. We were not paid during the war, but we did get paid. And there were about five or six of us that did, and I was one of them. I stayed with them until they didn't leave us anymore. And I have got that written down, that how easy it was to get to the hospital, although you couldn't buy gas like you could, and you conserved every ounce of gas. So we all had bicycles. And I said, in what I've written, I said, I never walked all the way to the hospital. I would start walking, but I always got picked up. We all did. You didn't have to thumb. When they saw that blue and white uniform, they immediately stopped. Even total strangers would stop.
Wow.
So you're going to the hospital? Yep. Get in.
That's great.
So we never had to walk.